Hello. Welcome to Syracuse Speaks, The View from the AHL, a Syracuse Crunch-centric podcast. I'm your host, Alex Ackerman. Let's get started. So today on Syracuse Speaks, we are welcoming back a friend to Failed Pass Hockey and my own personal friend, Patrick Williams. Patrick, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, it's middle of June. My team's out of the playoffs. Things at school are winding down. So I'm doing okay.
It is a weird feeling now that we're in mid-June. Like you said, you're winding school down and we're still not even into the finals yet. So it's been a long year, I think it's fair to say.
It has. And, you know, it's interesting with looking at what we already know about next season. And, you know, we know that the league is all going to be playing the same amount of games. We have that. Is it 72 game schedule next season?
72, whether you're east, west, north, south, anything. So that's good. Definitely will simplify things.
Yes. So we know Syracuse actually released some of their guaranteed dates already. So we know that the Crunch's home opener is going to be on October 22nd
next
season, which is late. So I'm kind of wondering. Yeah. So that's later. There's a possibility, as always, that this extended playoff format might stick around. Who knows? We haven't heard either here nor there on that yet. So do you think this is our foreseeable future with the playoffs going this late into the month of June?
Well, so I've actually thought about that question. And so the season is supposed to begin on October 14th, which is a Friday night. So the same, roughly the same weekend as this season. This season began on October 15th, which was also a Friday. So roughly that middle weekend of October. Now, I think where things got off track this year were with obviously all the postponements that pushed it back an extra week. It was supposed to end April 24th. It ended up ending April 30th. And I think the league had already built an extra week into the schedule kind of to accommodate potential disruptions. So that's why it went an extra week anyway. And then they had to tack on a second week on top of that. So typically, I think it would have ended sometime in mid-April. But because of the extra week that was added, as well as the extra week that then had to be tacked on, you ended up with a two-week difference. And obviously, then with the new playoff format, that resulted in a whole nother extra sort of round of games that hadn't been there before. So we don't know where that's going. I've heard different things, so I can't speak one way or the other to that. But I don't think it will end this late in general, like in the future. I think more likely it would be somewhere in the future, maybe around June 20th would be sort of the latest date. Which I think would be good, right? Like June, the end of June is tough, I think, for just the business as it is. But, you know, nobody really got a say in that this year because of everything that happened with the postponements. So I think that's sort of where going forward, you can more or less circle that June 20th-ish with a major-ish as a likely last day of the season or playoffs for the future. So the 72 game is going to simplify a lot of things just to have everybody on the same page. Certainly I know for standings purposes, I know for Jason Chamovich at the league office, with that playoff premiere he does every day for about 2 months. That thing is difficult enough with a standardized schedule, never mind having, you know, anywhere from 60 to 76 games, it just added a whole nother wrinkle of complications. So I'm sure for him, it'll be a little bit more of a streamlined approach. And hopefully just, we got a relatively normal season in this year, all things considered. Hopefully, I know we've said this before, but hopefully next season is normal. And truly normal, like as in 2018-19 normal, not post 2020 normal? So I guess that's a long way of answering that question.
I definitely sincerely hope that we never ever have to worry about points percentages ever again, because you know, that was one of the worst things that I found, just as someone who deals with a podcast as their main medium of getting information out, was trying to discuss points percentages and not really being able to talk in points and the different weird rounds and all of those kinds of things that we face this season with the playoffs. That was really challenging.
Yeah, because, you know, we're typically used to saying, well, this is a 2-point game, or, you know, 4-point swing, or all the traditional ways that we came up learning how to say it, right? Or explain the situation. I know players have the same thing, you know, like 2-point game. Okay. I can get my head around that. A 0.023 game doesn't quite have the same ring to it. And it just, you know, anything that where you start having to get into percentages and calculations is just more complicated. And I think everybody understands, like, you know, the fact that the league was able to pull off a season this year is no small feat. So, you know, having to have an uneven schedule and therefore having to do point percentages, I think it was just, you know, the price we had to pay for this season to happen. But it was a major lift, I think, for the league to get the standardized schedule going forward, and big victory. It's a little bit maybe sooner than I expected it would happen. But I think it will simplify everybody's life, both from the league standpoint and also just from the fan standpoint. Just, you know, remember, most fans are casual fans. So, you know, you need something where it's real simple at a glance. I looked at this, you know, the standings, you know, on, you know, the little insert in the program or something, and I can look at a glance and see, okay, my team is X points, you know, behind tonight's opponent, right? So just things like that, I think, will just make it a lot simpler for everybody. And I think that we've had a lot of complications in life, I think, the last couple of years. So if we can at least have our standings be simpler next season, I think there'll be a little victory for everybody. And, you know, I think full credit to the league to finally get that situation squared away. I mean, going back to 2015 with all the West Coast teams coming in and everything, that was obviously a massive shift for the league and, you know, required some creativity in terms of the schedule. Now we're all these years later, now we can finally maybe make that next step to a nice standardized 72, and it works out real well. 36 at home, 36 on the road. It's just, it works well. So I think that was a major victory for Scott Helsen and the rest of the league.
I was actually on a different podcast, shout out to Hockey from Across the Pond, who had me on this weekend. And I made the statement that I don't think the owners in this league, especially those on the East Coast, like Syracuse owner Howard Dolgan, like Laval's owner, like Toronto's owner, these owners gave up games. They gave up two home games to be able to make that schedule happen. And that's a lot of revenue, and that's a lot of attention in their home cities. And they gave up a lot in order to make this schedule happen. And I honestly don't think that that's being given enough credit in just kind of fan circles. And I'm not exactly sure if fans realize how much that was challenging to those owners to swallow their pride and say, okay, we're going to do this.
Swallow their pride and swallow their, you know, their wallets as well. Right. So yeah, well, like, you start sort of doing the rough, you know, math on it, right? You say, all right, average 5,000 fans. So that's one night, 5,000. You start, well, okay, let's say the average ticket price is in the $20 or so range, you know, plus, you know, concessions, depending on the market you're in, parking, depending on the market you're in. You start doing the math on that, and, you know, and also that's two fewer dates for sponsorships, for example. You start doing the math on that, and you're like, wow, that is a pretty significant financial sacrifice to make for a team like Syracuse. You know, they're on most given nights, they're going to bring a pretty decent crowd in that building. So everybody, I think, had to kind of give a little bit in order to make this happen. And, you know, a team like Syracuse, like I said, you know, that's, I don't know. I don't have access to their books, obviously, but it's no small sacrifice for them to do so. But I think everybody did realize, you know, for the betterment of the league as a whole, that, all right, let's back off on this a little bit. Let's, you know, do what we have to do to make this happen. And then, you know, we'll go forward. I think to do that, especially coming out of the pandemic, you know, the financial hit that they took the past 2 years, made that sacrifice that much more notable, because it is not a small thing in the best of times, never mind where, you know, you just, like Syracuse, they played all last season without a fan in the building. So, like, just everybody's taking a hit in one way or another the last couple of years financially, but, you know, some have really taken a hit and they've had to find ways around that. And, you know, so I think it's pretty commendable for a team like Syracuse, like you said, to do that for the sake of the league.
Talking about the playoffs that the league is currently trying to finish up and trying to get some of that revenue back during the playoffs, you know, Syracuse made that end of the season push. They got into the playoffs, they did what they needed to do, and then they promptly lost in round one, which was not necessarily, I think, a result many were expecting based on their March and April. So what did you see from the Crunch during that five-game series against Laval? What do you think went wrong? What do you think went right? How do you think that's going to affect coming into this fall with some maybe potential big changes ahead for the coaching staff, depending on what happens?
Yes. So it's always really complicated at this league to try to project the effects of the playoffs, for example, on the following season. Like for Tampa Bay, for example, when they had that loss to Columbus, that storyline more than carried over to the following season, right? But, you know, for an AHL team, right, you may turn over a third, a half, maybe even three quarters, depending on the situation of your roster, right? Possibly also your coaching staff. So a lot of times that kind of wipes the slate clean. So what happened in May can sometimes bear no resemblance to the effects in October. So I guess that's the first caveat right there. The second thing, what happened to Syracuse? I mean, that's a tough one, because I think part of it is they didn't necessarily get the top production from players that had carried the load for a lot of the season. A Barry Belay, for example, Udon, for example. I don't know how great Max Legacy was health-wise late in that series. And who knows? I mean, this was a situation where did they run out of gas? They played 55 games in around 100 and something, 10 days, 115 days down the stretch. And then come into the playoffs. And so they had that little break while the first round or that opening mini round started. And then they jumped into their own round that following weekend. Maybe there just wasn't much left. Maybe it's as simple as that. Maybe they were just out of gas. And they got up against a team that had a little bit more in the tank, and that was the difference. I mean, it came down to game five, which is a whole nother complicating factor. You know, a best of five is much different from a best of seven. There's that much less leeway. So I would, if, you know, it's one of those things you can't really know one way or the other, but if I had to put a finger on it, I would say, I think they just looked tired. They kind of hit the wall there, and they weren't really able to find that next gear that you have to find in the playoffs. And that was sort of the story of the Syracuse Crunch, their one and only playoff round this year.
Yeah, it was definitely hard watching, you know, and I think back to that game two against Laval at home, mm-hmm. when that goal was scored late. That basically won the game for Laval, yeah. that night. And it just felt like it was over then. It really did. Like, and there was no logical explanation for that. I mean, teams are going to lose at home, although Syracuse hadn't in like 2.5 months or some crazy thing at that point in time, but they're going to lose at home. It's going to happen eventually. A 1-1 playoff series tie is not the end of the world. It happens all the time. But there was something about that moment that just seemed to take the air out of the crunch and out of the fan base. And I'm not entirely convinced that they were ever really able to come back from that moment in game two.
I think especially because they had that 5-day break. So they weren't able to get back right at it, right? And sort of wipe that away. And they, you know, they had 5 days for that thing to kind of like linger and sit there, right? Before they could even get out. And then that game three was, that was a bad game for them. Just straight up, right? Like they were undisciplined and that game got away from them. And then, so, but then they come back in game four and they played a really good game there, right? And you're like, all right, well, maybe they have this thing figured out, right? And then they come home and they get a lead at home for game five. And you're like, all right, okay. This is looking pretty good for Syracuse. And then it just seemed like that last half of the game, they sat back and played not to lose. And that it's such an easy trap, I think, for teams to fall into. And it's one of the, I think one of the real areas that come up a lot with coaches, in my discussions around the league, players finding that balance of playing to win versus not playing to lose, not playing to make a mistake. And where is that line, right? And that line is hard for a player individually, and then you take that across the entire team. And so I think they had gotten – they'd worked so hard to get to that point coming off that game three. Then they win game four. Game five, they get the lead, and they're like, okay, we finally got this now, right? We don't want to do anything possible to screw this up. And then we're going to play this real safe. And I think subconsciously that just creeps into their game. And meanwhile, you have a team like Laval that just kept pushing. And then finally they break through. And it's hard, I think, when you play not to lose, for that to not eventually come and bite you. And I think that's what happened to Syracuse. And that was all she wrote. And, you know, it's just, it was an unfortunate ending because they did look like a team that could, had they got through, I think they could have definitely done some damage, but you know, you have to get through that first round and they weren't able to.
What's really unfortunate about that is just simply the fact that everybody, including myself, was concerned about the Lightning and how, you know, what are the Lightning, how are injuries going to affect, who are they going to call up if they get it, whatever. They've managed to stay relatively healthy this entire time.
Yeah.
So that hasn't even been a factor, which is, you know, a little like, oh, because a lot of the times it's very challenging for AHL clubs to have their parent club in the playoffs because of those things like that. Things happen. So it's really that to me is as the Lightning is looking at their third Stanley Cup final in 3 years. It just kind of makes me sit here on one hand and go, when is it going to be Syracuse's turn to, you know, maybe have that kind of a run again, like 2017. But it also does kill me a little bit because the Lightning hasn't really had to use anybody from Syracuse because they've managed, other than Braden Point, to stay relatively healthy.
And yeah, and it, so that's a great point. And then sort of the second, I guess, component of that is things kind of could have lined up really well. So like Utica got bounced. So that was a major obstacle out of the way. And had Syracuse faced Rochester, I like Syracuse's chances against Rochester. I mean, I like it quite a bit, actually. And I think they could have gotten past Rochester. Now they would have, I guess, gotten Springfield. And, you know, I think they could have played with Springfield. And, you know, who knows how that turns out. But, you know, so you start, like, doing the what-if game, and that can obviously drive you crazy. you know, if this happened and if this happened and this happened. But like you said, like Tampa stayed relatively healthy. So that's half the battle for the Calder Cup playoffs is your parent team not getting injuries and coming down and, you know, picking your roster apart. So that lined up, and then having a major obstacle like Utica out of the way, that lined up. But the Syracuse Crunch couldn't kind of hold up their end of the bargain and get through that first round to let some of those things become factors. And so here we are, and da 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 da. And, you know, it's that, you know, that, like you said, that what if game. But, you know, yeah, for Syracuse, I mean, those fans, they're one of the markets that really deserve a Calder Cup, I feel. Wilkes-Barre Scranton, I would also add to that list. Markets that have supported their teams well for decades. And, you know, they've come close, and there's been some times where you're like, all right, this is the year. And then it just mm-hmm. doesn't quite work out. And at 2017, I mean, came down to game six. I don't know.
Yeah.
You get past that game, you get to game seven, then that's a toss up at that point.
Yeah. I still think that the Crunch was the better team that year. I really,
yeah. I think you can make that argument, and it was just Grand Rapids Griffins.
Yeah.
Syracuse's existence are just in the way. And yeah, I mean, that's playoffs, right? Like,
I know.
Playoffs will drive you crazy.
Yeah. And it was 5 years ago, and I'm still sitting here going, I still think that could have been the year.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I remember us at that time having, like, sitting down and chatting and, like, thinking, like, all right, this might be the year for Syracuse. Like, everything lined up pretty well.
Yeah, it did.
You know, they got past Providence. That was a big obstacle to get past that year. And, you know, they get to game six. Things are looking pretty good, relatively speaking. You know, they were down, obviously, a game, but it just, yeah, didn't. It wasn't to be, I guess. And it really can. I mean, playoffs are a mind game, whether it's players, coaches, management, fans, media. I mean, you try to make sense of the playoffs. I mean, even when you have the benefit of hindsight, it doesn't always make sense. And I think that's certainly the case for that 2017 Crunch team, where, you know, they really could have won that. And you look at all the players from that team that went on to either, you know, obviously to NHL success or at least success elsewhere, the AHL or Europe. That was a good team, right? And that was certainly a team on paper that had every chance to win the cup, and they were that close. They were two wins away, but it's a tough trophy to win. Now you're in the league, soon to be 32 teams. So, you know, I mean, if your team wins even maybe once or twice in your lifetime, just statistically, you're doing all right. You know, never mind the fact that, you know, you have teams that kind of, you know, they win it more than once every 32 years. So it's just, yeah, it's the nature of the beast. I guess it's what we sign up for with hockey. There are no guarantees, and playoffs can be very cruel in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah, they can. And, you know, it can be hard to keep perspective. I have a lot of friends in this area, obviously, who are like Buffalo Bills fans, and, mm-hmm. you know, they had a really good season this past season. And I commiserated with them a little bit about their own experiences with that whole idea that you were just discussing, that this is what we signed up for and it isn't always great.
I mean, yeah, when you're thinking of Buffalo, right? Like at the time in the 90s, we went to four consecutive Super Bowls and came away with nothing. I can't imagine that as a fan, like what that must have been like. You know, you go there four times and come away with nothing, right? And that's a lot of fan emotional baggage, I guess, is the word, to carry around for a long time. I'm sure there's probably fans, you know, the long-term fans, long-time fans, who still, you know, are carrying that around with them. And, you know, it's one of those things, right, where, you know, this came up the other day where, you know, with Tampa, when they had that series against Columbus, right, where it just fell apart, and there was the talk at the time to blow the team up and start from scratch and this and that. And I mean, the idea that even, you know, or the Rangers, the same thing, like, you know, we'll be back. Well, maybe you will, but maybe you won't. It's tough just to get to the conference finals, right? Never mind to actually get past them into the final and win the cup. I think that's what makes what Tampa's done even that much more remarkable. The fact they've now back-to-back cups, now they're going at for a third. It's hard, right? Like, it's not easy even to get into that third round, let alone to actually go further. So don't discount, like, even just getting to that conference final as a major success, whether you're the Rangers or the Lightning or Syracuse or whatever, right? Like, it's tough. And there are no guarantees. And unfortunately, that is one of the cruel realities of hockey fandom. And I guess there's no way around it.
One of the, you know, things that the Lightning has done really well is obviously investing in development in their farm team. You know, they wouldn't be going to the finals this often if it wasn't for development within the organization. Syracuse has certainly benefited from their dedication to that. So as we look towards the Crunch's roster next season, and I'm sure you can tell where I'm going with this. the Lightning has actually, uncharacteristically, I may say, already made a move for the Crunch. Usually the Lightning is like, we're not dealing with you until we're done.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to focus on ourselves and then we will take care of you, you know, usually about a week before free agency starts and then into free agency. But much to the delight of me, and I'm sure other people too, it was announced just this past week that Gabriel Dumont will be returning to Syracuse as their captain this upcoming season. And not only that, but that his 2-year contract is an AHL only, which I think speaks to some really interesting dynamics there. And I'm sure you know more than most what it takes for these veterans to sign these AHL only contracts. So could you speak to that a little bit? I know you and I have talked and you made some great points. So could you just speak to what this is like for these players as they look at those decisions?
Well, for the longest time, if you're a player, right, like it's NHL or bust, right? And, you know, that's why they keep chasing. That's why, let's say Dumont, that's why he went to Iowa and Minnesota a couple years back. And so when you sign that AHL contract, I don't say you're officially ending your NHL aspirations, but you're certainly putting them on the shelf for the time being. And you're probably saying goodbye to the NHL as a viable option at that point. And so there's that mental game that I think players they need time to kind of get their head around that and, you know, recondition their mind that, all right, the NHL is no longer the goal. Now I'm shifting, and it's a major shift in that mindset of, all right, I'm now settling to be, I don't know, settling is not the right word, but I'm now repositioning myself to be the best AHL player I can. And one of my new goals now is to help other players chase that NHL aspiration. And that, I think, is a real, that's a tough head game for, even if you're pretty honest with yourself, that's a tough one, right? Like, it's been your aspiration since, you know, you were 5, and certainly something, you know, ever since you had turned pro, it was everything that was the entire goal. And so that's the trade-off. Now, the benefit, and I think this is where, you know, a player like Dumont is really, really smart and getting ahead of the game, is now you're getting yourself some security. So he got a 2-year deal, which by AHL standards is great. To get a 2-year AHL deal. You know, we know that this is very much a year-to-year contract league for veterans. So you get that security. You know that you're going to be in a place now for the 2 years. You're not going to get caught in that, you know, that waiver shuffle of, well, I got called up to the Lightning for a week. Now I got to go back to waivers. Oops. Now I got picked up on waivers and I got to like pack up and go somewhere else completely different. And, you know, like a Riley Nash situation where he was just bounced all over the league this year. Now it turned out pretty well for Riley Nash. He's now in, you know, Stanley Cup final, and he's been playing for the Lightning. So, you know, it worked okay for him, but it doesn't usually work that well. Yeah. So And I think the third wrinkle is this year is the whole job market for players this summer. You're looking at the KHL being in all kinds of upheaval right now because of world events. And, you know, I did some, you know, quick little research on that. And you look at the KHL now, just North American players, not even getting to European players, but North American guys. So guys who'd be maybe more compelled to come back to the American Hockey League. 50 players, North Americans, who were in the KHL this year, I would classify as either a top number one goalie, a top four, maybe top three defensemen at this level, or a top six forward. So you've now added 50 high-end players into that job market, right? And so that's a lot of competition for jobs now. That these are already tough now. We live in a world of the veteran rule. We live in a world where obviously finances across the hockey world have been hit pretty hard. So the job market's not looking great if you're a 30-year-old veteran, unless you're, let's say, Andrew Pavelski, right? You know, you just had back-to-back monster seasons. And, yeah, you're a free agent this summer. You're going to cash in. But for a lot of players, Dumont's obviously a very solid, even high-end player at this level. But, you know, you are in that older range, and it's that much harder. So I think for him, whatever he gave up in terms of maybe he had a 1 or 2% window still open for the NHL. This more or less closes that window, at least for the time being, but it gives him security. I think, you know, when you're sitting down and you're kind of being honest with yourself and trying to make a mature decision, I think this is a very smart decision on his part. So, I think full credit to him, to his agent, obviously that's a discussion you have with your family as well. I think he made the right choice.
You mentioned Riley Nash's waiver situation, but you figure Dumont himself got caught up in all of that. Mm-hmm. His first time around with the Lightning when Ottawa claimed him. Mm-hmm. I think that was in 2017, 2018, if I remember correctly. And then a couple months later, you know, he got injured in Ottawa, as you do, because it's Ottawa and their players just seem to be hurt constantly. Mm-hmm. So he gets injured, and then Ottawa realizes, oh, now you're healthy, but we don't have any room for you. So they tried to send him down, and the Lightning was like, not so fast, and claimed him back. But yeah, what a crazy couple of months for him and his family, just in that little kind of microclimate of an example, because that was, I mean, it was crazy for the fan base. It was crazy for his family. It was crazy for the organizations. And, you know, I know waivers have really good intentions, but sometimes I think that the way they affect the players' lives, especially those with families, can really make it challenging to find the positive in there.
Yeah. So that's the off ice. And then the on ice is just, you never really get settled into a role. Now, like, now you show up in Ottawa and you're just this guy, you know, you haven't been there, you know, the head coach probably is not familiar with you, you know, like, and you're kind of there just to fill a spot or a need for a given moment. And then, you know, then they don't need you anymore. So then they're sending you down, and then you're going back to Tampa and Syracuse, and you just never get a flow to your season. And I think honestly, sometimes waivers have disrupted the careers of more players than maybe any other factor. Even including injuries sometimes, at least an injury, you sort of like, all right, well, I'll be on the shelf for 8 weeks. And I know in 8 weeks, if I do my rehab and I, you know, everything goes well, I'll be back, right? Well, waivers is just such a day-to-day existence. I mean, Mike Paquette is another example, right? Like, I mean, he's kind of the most extreme example, like, you know, three teams in 1 week and being traded and just everything. And like, I think that really burnt him out. His final year of playing, and just, I know players, I mean, they just find it just so disruptive to their lifestyles. And like you said, certainly if you have families, and that's usually who it affects. Guys on waivers are usually people, you know, let's say in their early 30s. And that's often when players, you know, have the family situation crop up. It's not, you know, waivers would be a lot different if it was just 21-year-olds, right? Who are just, you know, living on their own. They can pack their bag and go. Like, when you're a 10-year veteran, it's a whole different story. You have other people in your life that are affected now. It's not just you. And, you know, players take that very seriously, as they should. And So it's just complicated, right? And I think for him, you just want to get off that kind of that. It's almost like getting out of the rat race, right? And just be settled, right? Like you can be, you come to Syracuse, you know you're going to be there all year. You can get a place, right? Like you can be having relatively normal lifestyle, as normal as it gets in this business. And you're fully invested in what's going on with the crunch, and you're not looking, oh, am I going to get called up, you know, today or this or that, you know? And a lot of times you see players now, they have maybe their best seasons as a result. And Matt Molson was another one. I mean, he was a player in the NHL for 10 years, 600 plus games. He could have probably continued to chase 1 year NHL contracts, but he was like, you know what? I want to win a championship. I want to be in one place for the whole season. I'm going to sign an AHL deal, and maybe I'll swallow my pride a little bit. Maybe I'll sort of kiss that NHL aspiration, or I mean, or staying in the NHL goodbye. And I'll take stability over, you know, maybe the higher ceiling. Right. So I think it's a smart move for a lot of players. And I think, but it does require them to be honest with themselves and to be honest about their situation and to kind of make that mental break from the NHL dream that they've chased, you know, for their whole lives.
So Syracuse has its captain.
Yes.
The vote is still out on the coaching staff, and I won't get you into trouble by asking you to make any, you know, bold predictions there, but I mean, would you say that this is the year Syracuse loses Ben Grew?
6 years is a long time in any spot for a coach, either because you don't have success and they don't keep you for 6 years, or because you have success and you move on. Now, Ben's a weird situation because Ben's had a lot of success, both winning and development-wise, and yet he's still in Syracuse. And it is a little bit, a lot of people around the league are a little bit perplexed by it. And, you know, like we know that he had gone after a position in Arizona that got filled eventually. I have to think this is Ben's last year that just wrapped up. I think Ben's on to bigger things, and Ben's made no secret about his desire to chase that NHL job and just like a player. You know, like Ben's not, let's say, a Roy Sommer. Roy Sommer in San Jose, he was very secure where he was. He liked where he was. The NHL wasn't what he was chasing at that point in his career. He was in his, late 50s, early 60s. Stability was what Roy Sommer was looking for, and that's what he found. Obviously, he was that same position for 24 years, which I don't think that's a record that will ever be broken in this league again. I mean, but I think if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Syracuse Crunch, if I had to guess, I would say this. I think you can be very grateful and happy that you got Ben for 6 years, because I think that's way more than you could have reasonably expected. But I think Ben's done well, and Ben has aspirations, and I think Ben is going to eventually now realize those goals and move on. And that's great, right? Like, that's what this league is about, right? I mean, this league is, as Sheldon Keefe said, you know, like he said, we'll sum up the AHL in one word: opportunity. And that's what this league is about, is opportunity. And it's a chance to take your career even further. And I think for a coach like Ben, then if that happens, then, you know, mission accomplished. And, you know, I think, you know, good on him if he does end up in the NHL. He's, God knows he's worked for it. He's really put in the years and the time. And yeah, that first run in Rochester, that didn't go great. So he went back to junior and kind of reconfigured himself a little bit and learned from that experience. Then came into Syracuse back in 2016, and just he's been a success story almost from day one. And I don't think the Tampa Bay Lightning are chasing their third Stanley Cup without Ben. And Ben is the guy that is overlooked in this whole operation, I think, a lot from the outside. But I know on the inside with the Tampa Bay Lightning, he is certainly not overlooked. They're very well aware of the value that he brings. But this is a business where you also don't want to stand in the way of people, you know, if they have an opportunity elsewhere. It's smart business to let people seek those opportunities. I think that's what, if I had to, you know, if I had to be a betting man, I think that's what I would probably see happening this summer for Ben.
I mean, and there's so many opportunities out there right now. It seems like half the league up in the NHL is going to be looking for at least part of a coaching staff in some way, shape, or form. I mean, I just saw that the Florida Panthers let go former Syracuse forward Derek McKenzie. They let him go this afternoon, supposedly, I'm seeing out there. So more and more openings are coming up. And I definitely agree with you. You know, Ben Grew, he's worked for it. And he deserves a look up there for sure.
And, you know, he's obviously, he's a brilliant hockey mind. And, you know, like, I think he kind of smoothed those rough edges he had early in his career that, you know, didn't maybe serve him well in Rochester and Florida. And he's really worked hard, I think, to smooth that over and come into the Syracuse, get that second opportunity and really make something of it. And he's done a fantastic job. I mean, you're like, I don't know how many times I said this, but I mean, to me, Syracuse and Tampa is the ideal affiliation. They develop like crazy. They develop, whether you're talking about role players or even guys that are gone to stars like a Yanni Gord, and they win, right? Every year the Crunch somehow seem to be in the mix. They don't win the cup necessarily, but you know, you always have to figure the Crunch would be a playoff team. And then once you get in the playoffs in this league, I mean, then, you know, anything can happen. And I think that's all you can ask for, whether you're Tampa or Syracuse, you know, to have that set up. And it's a credit to what everything, obviously, that Tampa does, but it's also a credit to what the Syracuse Crunch brings to the operation and what they offer. And there's a reason that they've been able to keep a team like Tampa there for over 10 years, because they offer a really good set up in Syracuse that's just kind of plug and play. If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you don't have to worry about things when you send your players there. And I think that's such a huge advantage for the Crunch that they have that operation and good people in their front office and good fan support and everything that you want to have for your prospects from a Tampa perspective. That's what Syracuse can offer.
Looking at Syracuse, you know, I'm checking out just what Cap Friendly has to say. It almost seems like their roster is pretty set. They do have a couple unrestricted free agents coming into next season, you know, and this season's free agency. Ravi Ellie is a notable one. Anthony Richard is a notable one. Charles Houdon is an unrestricted free agent. Frederick Claesson, Darren Radish, and then Legace, who you talked about earlier. Out of that group, do you see any of them returning, you know, kind of just based on there's a lot of young kids in the organization that are probably going to be coming on up and fighting for spots? And do you see any of those UFAs returning coming into next season?
I think some will return, yeah. Part of it, I think, depends what happens with the Syracuse coaching staff, obviously. I think the one challenge for Tampa and Syracuse is if you're a player, on the one hand, it has been shown that there is opportunity there. On the other hand, you are trying to crack the Tampa Bay Lightning. Not an easy thing to do. So let's say you're a Matt's Legacy, for example, right? Like, you know that you're probably not breaking that roster in Tampa. So you're, when you sign there, you're pretty much all but assuring that you're going to be in the American Hockey League, barring a call here or there for, you know, a week. There's just not many openings on that Tampa roster year to year. So I think that's the one challenge that the Crunch face and certainly Tampa faces, you know, in filling out the Crunch roster. So I do think, I don't think all those players will be back. I think, you know, let's say like Houdon is what, 27? I believe is 25. You're in that stage now where you really, you're, no pun intended, come down to crunch time. And this is sort of your last final push toward an NHL job at some point. You know, if you didn't get your chance in Tampa this year, I think a lot of players are inclined to like, well, you know, if there's 31 other teams, I'll take a shot somewhere else. You also have Seattle now coming with Coachella Valley. They have almost probably 3/4 of a roster to fill out. They have anywhere, I think, from 12 to 14 spots that they have to fill out now that they have their own sole affiliation. So that's a whole other wrinkle in this year's job market.
You mean to tell me that someone will want to spend more time in Coachella Valley than they will in Syracuse, New York in the middle of January?
I mean, Coachella Valley. So it's your parent team is Seattle, which is an expansion team this season that did not have a good year. So jobs will be open there, right? So if you're a player, you're looking at that situation, you're thinking, well, if I sign there, either I'm in Seattle in the NHL, or worst case scenario, I'm in Coachella Valley playing in a beautiful building in a market where, I mean, Palm Springs is just a beautiful place to live.
Uh-huh.
And where every day you wake up and it's, what, 75 degrees and sunny and you're playing golf or you're doing whatever after practice.
Uh-huh.
Not a bad, you know, not a, oh, and you'll probably make, you know, I don't know, $250,000 probably. Not a bad setup.
No, it's not. It's not.
You know, and I have to laugh, like, so somebody last night said, you know, James Neal. Why is James Neal still playing? You know, what? Blah, 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 LOL, right? And I thought I didn't write back because I don't want to get into that. But, like, I'm like, well, James Neal is getting paid to play pro hockey. And James Neal doesn't need the money. But, nevertheless, James Neal is making, what, $750,000 a year to play pro hockey. I don't think James Neal is losing at life. I think that sounds pretty good to me, right? You know, play pro hockey and pull down $750 a year. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't sound like a loser to me. Like, maybe we have very different definitions of loser that person and I. But I don't know. That seems like somebody that's doing okay for themselves. And the same thing if you're going to Coachella Valley. Like, hey, if you're pulling down six figures to play pro hockey and live in Palm Springs all winter, I don't know. It seems like, I don't know, you've got a pretty good grasp on life. And I'm not feeling too bad for anybody that ends up there, either in Seattle or Coachella Valley. And one way or another, you're going to be doing all right for yourself. So, and I think that's, so a lot of players, like, you know, that's what they're looking at, right? Like, and, you know, if there's an opportunity, they'll play on the moon, right? But, you know, certainly, obviously, those other variables do come into play. Money, obviously, and also lifestyle, right? And, you know, this is a different NHL from like what we came up with, right? Where it was more kind of these gritty towns and, you know, winter and all that. And now you're competing against the likes of Coachella Valley and San Diego and Tucson, Arizona, and, you know, places that are winter weather going in their favor. So it's a little bit of a different wrinkle now in terms of players and free agency and kind of what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. What do you see? So if Max Legace is thinking like, hey, you know, there's really nowhere for me to go here. I've heard some chatter about the Lightning potentially going with Hugo Elnefelt and Amir Mishtikov as Syracuse's duo, which I'm sure you know me well, so you have to know that I'm a little stressed over that potential eventuality, just because we know in this league, generally a young tandem doesn't work. The Lightning has kind of tried it before. It didn't work. So, like, do you see that maybe being a possibility? You know, credit to the two of them. They performed really well under fire this season and with injury, you know, messing with both of their efforts. And, you know, I saw nothing wrong with the job that they did. I'm just not entirely sure that either one of them is ready for the full-time, like, number one starter role.
Yeah. And there's two sides of that too, right? Obviously there's the Syracuse side of things where, you know, having, you know, do we have two goalies that can win us games on a pretty regular basis? And then there's the Tampa side of things where, geez, if we have an injury, we need to call up a number three goalie. Are we comfortable with one of those players as our backup? I don't know. I would tend to think not. They're both obviously very still on the inexperienced side. And, you know, they had their moments this year, but they also had some growing pains. I think the general format is you want to have a real established veteran like Elise or somebody else, and then supplemented by one of the two young prospects as kind of a backup, or, you know, maybe they make a push and, hey, then, you know, worst case scenario, then you have a decision to make. Tampa also has a good setup there with Orlando, with ECHL, so you have a place where you can definitely send your other goalie. He's going to get a lot of playing time, so it's not a situation where, like, for example, Laval with Michael McNiven for, gosh, a number of years, he bounced around the ECHL because they didn't have their own dedicated affiliation. So he, there was sort of just whoever would take him, but then he's not the priority. So that can be a tough situation. But if you're Tampa, you have a nice structured arrangement. Syracuse in the AHL, Orlando ECHL, your players are all kind of there's a spot for them wherever they do end up. So I think, yeah, you go with a veteran guy for your number one in Syracuse, one of the two of them as the backup in Syracuse, and then the other one goes to be the number one in Orlando. And you switch, and maybe you move them back and forth to get playing time, but I think that is generally the accepted formula for teams now, especially a team like Tampa that, you know, even next year, they're going to be, gosh, they may be chasing a fourth Stanley Cup. And, you know, you don't want to have things come down, you know, be in the hands of, well, let's say Vasilevsky's injured and then our backup's injured and now all of a sudden, like, one of our, you know, 21, 22-year-old raw prospects is now all of a sudden our number one. You know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think we'll see a good veteran. If not, like to say, it's somebody else. And the market's great this year. Pretty much anything you want is on the market. So there's no shortage of options, both if you're Max or if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay. Phew. You have helped me because a couple people have said this to me and I'm like, I don't like that idea of having two children and not together. That really bothers me. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Sometimes you need, a big brother needs to be there to kind of, you know, the younger two kids, you know, like you need a babysitter, so to speak. And, so I don't know what people are telling you, but it doesn't really make sense. I mean, you saw, for example, in San Jose with Barracuda this year, they went with prospects strictly in net, and it did not go well, to say the least.
No, it didn't.
They finished last overall. They finally had to bring in out Stalock, you know, late in the season, but by that point, things were pretty much, you know, done. And you don't want to be chasing a goalie middle of the year trying to find a spot, you know, or find somebody out there, you know. So get your ducks in a row in July when things are calmer and you have a much more, you know, much more of a selection.
Yeah.
And I think there's one thing we know about the Lightning, Stacy Roost, you know, kind of more specifically, who handles a lot of things with Syracuse, is they're very organized. They have a plan. And I think they'll have to have things squared away. I mean, every summer we sort of wonder, oh, what's going to happen with Syracuse? And they seem to find a way, right? Like, you know, and even I think like with Dumont, they're already getting things squared away now. You know, they're getting an early start on things. They're nothing if not decisive in Tampa. They see someone they like, they go after them, right? Mm-hmm. They keep them. You know, some teams, they kind of hem and haw, and the players can't get a straight answer. You know, do they want me back? Do they not want me back? So the player kind of gets bent out of shape, and then he starts looking elsewhere, and then the relationship kind of falls apart. Tampa's not like that. Tampa's like, if they like you, they're going to get the deal done. And That's why guys come back. That's why Dumont now is, I mean, he could go to a lot of places, right? He's coming off a great season, no less. Highly respected veteran. He could definitely get a deal somewhere, but he knows what he has here, and that makes it a very attractive situation for a player like him.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I really, really appreciate it. And I know that you're going to have a busy couple of weeks as the league finishes up. And then free agency is quite literally right around the corner from the end of the AHL's regular season. So
I believe it's July 13th.
Okay.
So, and then the draft is, what, the 7th and 8th?
Yeah.
So, yeah, if this thing goes 6-7 games, that's the end of June. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's really no offseason anymore. Maybe a week or two in August. But then even then, you're sort of gearing up for the season at that point. So, yeah, it's pretty much a year-round adventure now.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to get back to the July 1st free agency date? I'm just randomly curious because I didn't even realize that it wasn't, you know, back to normal this year. So do you think we'll ever get back to that?
I hope so. I like to have free agency more or less wrapped up by around July 10th, which works pretty well with the July 1 start. You know, by that point, most of the big names are signed and squared away, and then you can kind of like, you know, ease up a little bit on things. And I hope so. I mean, I think I speak for everybody when I just hope we go start going back to normal, you know,
like, yeah,
let's go back to 2019 and you know, maybe this is just a transition year, you know, of going from sort of the worst of it, you know, back in 2020 and 2021. You know, it is easy to forget, like, hey, you know what, a year or so ago we were playing games in empty buildings with tarps. You know, fake fan noise and, you know, the cardboard cutouts of the fans. I mean,
yeah.
When I think back to that, I'm like, it's pretty good now.
Yes. You know? Amen. So, absolutely.
Like, that was, every so often you'll see a photo or something crop up or some sort of reminder of the, like, days of the spring of 2021 where literally it's, I remember sitting in those buildings. It's like, it was like you could hear a pin drop in these buildings.
Yeah.
Right? Like you could hear the chatter on the benches, between the benches and on the ice, you know, and then just every time I see a tarp now, I almost get like kind of like a twitchy feeling. Like, I don't ever want to see another tarp covering seats or, and I understand why teams did it, but heaven forbid those cardboard cutouts of the fans, like they just, I see them and I, like I said, like I like, oh, sounds shivers down my spine because it was just, it's a reminder of a very, very bleak period, not only for hockey, I mean, hockey's just whatever, of just the world and society and everything that happened, and just the time best left behind, I think, I guess.
Yeah. Definitely. And hopefully that will be what we do moving forward. So I do thank you so much again. Good luck with covering the last little push here for the league. And I know that we will be having you on again as we take a look at whatever the Lightning do for free agency and potentially what happens with the coaching staff. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
I think that will do it for this week's episode, so I want to thank you all so much for listening. I'm Alex Ackerman. I'm the host and creator of this podcast, and my social media is always open to anybody who wants to come follow me or wants to give any kind of feedback or ask questions. My personal Twitter is at Allovimo, A-L-L-O-V-I-M-O, and my hockey handle is over at Sinbin Crunch. I would also like to thank Kevin MacLeod and Purple Planet Music for the royalty-free tracks that were heard throughout this podcast. I hope you all have a wonderful week or two until I see you again. Take care of each other out there in Crunchland, and I'll talk to you soon.